the main thing I think is erring on the side of love, accepting people, realizing that we live in a broken culture, and he said, come all, you know.
Oh, hey there, welcome to Group Chat. My name is Clayton. This is a resource designed to equip and encourage group leaders at Rush Creek to cultivate environments for people to encounter God and engage in biblical community as we all pursue becoming forms of the faith, unite, help people find and follow Jesus. Today, I am joined by my friends Barry and Lauren as we talk about how to engage culture. We look at the people in our life who have made an impact on us. We look where our cultural and kingdom values maybe overlap to see where God is meeting us and where he is working and how we join in with him there. For all of our resources at Rush Creek, you can go to rushcreek.org/groups. But I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did having it. Hey there, my name is Clayton. Today I'm joined by Lauren and Barry. This is our second take. I'm just going to talk with listeners because Barry just threw me for a loop as we started record. But today I'm joined by my friends Barry and Lauren. And I want y'all to take a little chance to introduce yourself, what you do at Rush Creek, and one interesting fact about yourself. And we're going to start with Lauren.
Hey guys, I am Lauren, and I am a kids minister here at Rush Creek. I am primarily at the Green Oaks campus, but then I also oversee the whole kids team as the kids team lead. And something interesting about me, I love to run, so I have completed 2 marathons recently. It's kind of a new thing to go that long, but yeah.
Enough marathons for Barry and I both as well.
No, not for me. Hey guys, thanks for tuning in, and it's great to be able to share today a little bit. But I'm at the Mansfield West campus. I'm groups pastor and connections there. And interesting fact, you know, I love spending time with people. Is that an interesting fact?
That's pretty interesting.
It doesn't wear me out. In fact, I get energized
by
conversations, even like what we're going to have today. So I hope that's helpful.
Barry, I don't know if I've ever told you, but whenever the interesting fact about me is whenever I meet somebody from another campus, especially Mansfield West, and they ask what I do, I usually just say, I'm the Barry but have hair. That's how I introduce myself to people. I'm like,
you're
from Miralagos? I'm like Hope. Or you're from AP? I'm like Stan.
Yeah.
From Midlothian.
I do the same thing.
Yeah.
I do the same kind
but
of thing.
But you used to have hair.
Used to. Absolutely.
Yeah. I remember finding that cassette tape with your hair. Lovely locks. Well, I'm looking forward to this conversation. This whole season, we are looking at how we as foreigners of the faith can engage the culture around us. And the conversation today is really going to be centered around how we can engage our community as leaders and as biblical communities as well with the message of Christ and the gospel of the kingdom. Because that's what foreigners do. We go and we proclaim the good news of Jesus to those around us. But when I think about this, this is something that we've learned and we've watched others go before us. And I think it's a great place to start to look at back in our lives as somebody that really influenced us and modeled following Jesus and engaging culture well. So y'all have anybody from your life that's kind of shaped your perspective of following Jesus and how you engage the culture around you?
Yeah, sure. Lots of people, you know, but I guess most recently I've been talking with some guys, and one of the guys in there is a chaplain. And I guess chaplaincy has changed a lot over the last several years, and I mean, it's become a very, worldly kind of approach to dealing and helping people. And he's coming from like a Baptist background as a preacher, pastor, and now stepping into a world that's, you know, much more loose, you know, maybe more liberal, in other words, you know, in the way they're approaching the ministry of chaplaincy, and not really done with a biblical value in it. And just listening to him, how he navigates in those relationships with other chaplains and how the organization is running it and how he wants to approach ministering to people that are sick and struggling with their health and stuff like that. It's been really kind of cool to see through his view of how he is adapting his worldview to other people's worldview and allowing that to mix, you know, in the way he ministers and maybe the guidelines and guardrails that he's supposed to walk in and how he's doing that. And just a change in mindset of relaxing his very legalistic style of ministering to people to a much more flexible and but loving, you know, and just seeing the transformation in the way he's doing that. And it's been really helped me in looking at how I look at the world through a real bubble kind of experience and just really erring more on the side of love than on judgment or legalism. And it's been very helpful for me to take some of the things that he's struggling with and struggling along with him, but also learning and growing from his experience. And just being more on the loving side, aspect, a graceful side of that.
I when I think of who's influenced me, you know, it, like Barry said, it kind of changes for the season. Like growing up, I can think of pastors and youth pastors that modeled this well, and mentors that were in the church that modeled it well. And but now, as an adult, thinking like recently, who is around me? Honestly, I think the first person I think of is my husband, Johnny. Mm-hmm. He just sees people well. He knows every name on our street of our neighbors. He's really good at seeing people and seeing people's needs, and it goes beyond just our neighborhood, but I don't know. He challenges my faith every day to be more Christ-like in reaching those who are far from Jesus. And so when I first think of just somebody that models living Christ-like, loving, engaging people for where they're at, and you know, talking about no judgment but on the side of love and people who are different, he does that really well. He's like you, Barry. He gets energized by people. Like, I'm the opposite.
I need to meet this guy.
I love people.
Don't invite him to tacos because he will not. This is a running joke. He will not go to lunch with me anymore.
Why?
Because
I've tried to recruit him to be a group leader because of his compassionate and like hospitable heart. But he's like, I've even bribed him to like fly him somewhere for like lunch. And he's like, I'd love to, but no.
Yeah.
But he's so kind.
But he just gets like for me, I'm more of an introvert, which is kind of surprising with the role I have. But I love people and I love being around people. But when I need to be recharged, you know, that's when I get myself back. Johnny just, he's energized by people. Mm-hmm. If he had it his way, he would have somebody over every night of the week at our house. So when I think of the closest person to me that influences this way, it's Johnny for sure. But I think I can think of a lot of women in the church now. Hope Lodge is another person that I think of when I just think, you know, she tries to get in culture and understand it, but still be that light and that. I think when we talk about culture, it can go extreme. You can look like culture, or you can be in culture and be a light. And I think Hope does that really well. I think Johnny does that really well.
No, that's good. It's important to look at people who are in immediate vicinity of you because you get to rub shoulders with them. So especially a spouse and then somebody in your community is great. But then there's also a lot of wise, like the guys who are now in my life who are influential are mainly authors that I probably would never get the chance to meet, but the way that they engage culture, especially in a way that honors Christ in their story, like Mark Sayers he's one of the wisest followers of Jesus I know, but it's also has a cultural pulse, like his pulse like on their culture to see the movements before they really happen. And so engaging with people both locally that we get to rub shoulders on, but two things that I loved what y'all said, especially engaging this conversation is, Barry, you were talking about how your friend is adaptive and flexible. Doesn't mean that we have to let go of our values or our convictions, but it reminds me of Paul's action, both I've become all things to all people, but also when he's walking through, he's like, look at this cultural idol. I'm going to share now with you based off your worldview and religion about who God is. And that's been out of a place of love. And it ties so well with what Lauren said. Lauren, you said about Johnny, is he sees people. To live at a different pace, to engage those around us, are two key things, I think, to engage with, because we're so busy. And so to be aware of your own worldview, but to also be aware of your schedule, is important. And so as we look now as leaders to engage those around us and help, one, lead our people to engage our culture in the places where they work, how can we as leaders of biblical communities and also just as followers of Jesus and a part of biblical community, whether you're not a leader or not, how can we lead our communities to work for the good of the whole community? And when I think of this, I think of when Paul was writing to Thessalonica and he, in his opening paragraph, like he ends down like, hey, your example has become to all believers in Greece and throughout Macedonia as well. And now the Lord is also bringing that beyond everywhere because of the example of your showing your kindness that you gave to us, that you turned away and you serve the living God. And I think that's a beautiful testament of what happens when we engage by seeing people and by loving people. So what are some practical ways that we can lead our communities to engage the good of our whole community here in the DFW area?
I don't think we can not have an influence. Mm-hmm. Whenever we meet together, that's a sign, that's a symbol that people pick up on. I would say one of the most practical ways is taking our groups outside the four walls and experience group in the outer, in culture. Mm-hmm. You know, the greatest experiences I have are in coffee shop and bagels, where I'm meeting with a group of guys and people are watching, people are listening, even though they don't act like it. The most unsuspecting people will come up and say something. And it happens, and now those are just the rare people that would be willing to step out and say something out of the scores of other people that are listening, that have heard something, that are thinking. Yeah. It sparks something in them and walk away. We will never know. Yeah. But just being together in the community, and I mean, it just goes along with scripture, you know. Mm-hmm. They will know us by our love. They're gonna know us, and we've gotta lean into that a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. I think finding ways as a whether it's your small group or whatever it is, to be out in the community, serving within the church is important and great, but serving beyond these walls, whether it's going to Mission Arlington or wherever, serving outside of the church walls is important, like you said, and doing life, like you said, outside of the walls. And I even think if there's a need in your own personal life that you can bring people along with you, like I have this friend who's struggling, well, let's all get together and help her in this way. I think that's how we as biblical communities can work together to go beyond just the four walls.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's living going beyond the four walls and doing life together lives in a way that begs the question, something is different about you. Like normally when we go to the grocery store, everybody's in their own little individual world doing their own thing. You go to a coffee shop, I'll admit I'm there with my headphones in my own little world. But when I start to hear somebody like talking about the complexities of their heart, whether religious or not, I start to tune my music out. I'll take that down, and I'm intrigued by that because I'm curious. It's probably eavesdropping, and I'll work on that.
Is that a sin though? I've never heard anything about you.
There's
can't
opportunities.
Listen to somebody else's
there's opportunities. I think that you can step in kindness in.
Yeah,
I'm always encouraged, like when I see somebody reading or they're talking about a book or sermon that was intriguing. But then there's times like when you're doing this in areas, you have to be wise about your conduct. Mm-hmm. Like if you're gossiping in the name of prayer, I don't know why I always do air quotes like when I'm doing prayer quotes.
He was too.
Podcast.
He was doing it.
But if you're gossiping in the name of prayer requests, like of course people are going to listen to that and they're like, oh, yeah, there's those Christians. They just all they do is gossip about those around and judge those. But if it's really about the complexities of your heart to say, okay, what God, what are you doing? But also, how can we follow you? And it's a beautiful thing to engage culture that way. But also, as a learner, I think you're saying finding ways to join in. We have Rush Week is a great, but I think you're part of a group who y'all also go to Retirement Village once a month.
Yeah, so we, once COVID hit, it stopped for a while, but we're about to start back up. But yeah, we go to just a retirement village, a retirement home in Fort Worth. It was kind of a lower income.
Yeah.
It's through Beautiful Feet, I think, first started it. But so yeah, we just serve once a month. We bring our kids. I think that's important too.
Yep.
If you have if you have kids, like seeing, having them see you serve outside of church is huge. And I think it goes back to just seeing people, like you said, slowing down, taking you out of your own headspace for a while and just looking out and seeing how can I gauge in who is around me.
So if we believe that our God is always working, and it's His Spirit that's like searching the earth and convicting of his righteousness and of our sin, as the Apostle John would say, He's working everywhere, and we just have to be aware and join him there. He's working in a retirement home, and a lot of these people, often their families like place them in there, and they just have connections with each other, and it's a beautiful place to be and to go to. John Stott said, if we truly love our neighbors and because of their worth desire to save them, we shall be concerned for their total welfare, the well-being of their soul, their body, and their community. And this is important. Like, we're not just trying to get people across the finish line. We're not serving them just to kind of bait and switch, like, hey, let me do this for you so I can share this gospel when you get across this finish line. I'm doing this because our theology and our view of God says you have intrinsic worth and value. Mm-hmm. So we would love for you to enter into eternity with us, but still in this life, I'm going to care for your total welfare because I want to show that I love you. And so finding opportunities to engage your neighborhood, and I think as you're sharing earlier, like Johnny, like walking around and getting to know your neighbors, that's a great place to start to engage. Because if you meet at your home, Barry, your neighbors know that something's going on every
Tuesday
night. Like Barry's throwing a party over there. What is happening? And if your community members are parking on lawns and
other people's
space, and you're not caring for them, like that can cause some tension.
It can. I've had a neighbor come over. It was early on when they had newly moved in the neighborhood, and my group was parking, I guess, you know, in the street in front of their house. And she came over and knocked on the door. Can you guys move that car? You know. But since then, you know, being able to, like, I saw that neighbor who's having struggle with their lawnmower, couldn't get it started, so I just pulled my lawnmower, take it, you know, and those small gestures have built an opportunity for that could be a wall and a barrier. I, you know, we could easily go, okay, I'm not going to have anything to do with you. You don't have any tolerance for me. I'm not going to have any tolerance for you. But if we just go the extra mile, you know, and just go, hey, what's mine is yours, a lawnmower, take it, you know, and that breaks down the walls.
It does. I remember one group leader telling me that a house right down the road was starting to look like their lawn was not being taken care of. Their house was starting to kind of fall into shambles. And they didn't know that this neighbor had a medical condition that kept them from actually keeping up with their housework. And so somebody in their group, after a few weeks of driving by, like, hey, can we do something? Can we? And they just, as a group, went and took care of this neighbor's yard without, like, even telling that person. And so then that neighbor, like, would walk down the street and, like, hey, who did this? And they were like, we don't know. Like, it's a great gift. They didn't take credit for it. They didn't want to take credit for it. They just wanted to serve out the kindness of their heart, to care for the welfare of that person. And so looking for opportunities like that as well. I think one of the most practical places that we can use, and I love y'all's input on this, is the practice of hospitality. Mm-hmm. It's just using the table. I mean, Jesus had this great mission to seek and save the lost, but the way he went about it was eating and drinking with people at the table. How has the practice of hospitality impacted your life? And how have you seen it grow some relationships in your life?
Well, going way back when I was young, before small groups were kind of sexy in the church, you know? They had Sunday school, you know, and But my parents were really like, they modeled inviting. They absolutely loved the opportunity of inviting people. So it was very common, almost every Sunday evening, there was somebody coming over to the house to enjoy a meal with. And so that, like, and hearing adult conversation and being involved in adult conversations was just so helpful in, you know, my understanding of community and family and the importance of sitting around a table and recognizing the difference of conversation around a table versus that in like a living room. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really amazing how the flow can be such more organic than when you go into a more structured kind of a conversation. Yeah. And so I learned that at an early age, like, keep it at the table. There's something spiritual, I don't know, what Jesus implanted in reclining at the table that is very powerful. Yeah. And it's able to break down the walls again of people being transparent and authentic in a conversation.
I think it's a good idea. Like, if your group is kind of hit that comfortable, or you notice that there's a kind of a different posture in how you respond to questions in a living room as to a table, eat together more. Start to like slide in some of those conversations there, because it's a more laid back, I'm gonna be another level of real. But when we sit in that circle, sometimes we sit up straight, we have the answers before us, so there's something powerful about that.
When I think about who's influenced me in that area, I also think growing up, my parents, they were always involved in youth group and serving. And so I just, whenever there was an opportunity to offer their home for something, they always did it. So for student weekends and all those things, like, they modeled just everything they had was just up for people to use. And so not necessarily around the table, but even just general, like, they opened their home to anybody, to mainly like my friends and my siblings' friends and stuff, but even to adults hosting groups at their house and things like that. But so growing up, it was modeled well for me in my home. And then again, going back to now, I mean, like I said, Johnny would have somebody over every night if he could, and he really pushes me in that, because there are days where, you know, I've been at work and talking to people and I just want to come home and like shut myself in my room, and Johnny really challenges me to give myself out more and to open our doors more. And so
What hospitality does, because it's not I believe in our leader resources, Barry, a while back you did a conversation about entertainment versus hospitality. Mm-hmm. They're not the same thing. Hospitality is just, you kind of gave that look like, I remember you doing that. It was so I'll link that in our show notes. But that hospitality is, you're not doing it to get something back from these people. The compound word there in the Greek is love of the stranger. And it's what Rosea Butterfield said, that hospitality is turning strangers into neighbors and neighbors into family. Mm-hmm. So it's creating this space where people who you might think are an enemy because they believe differently, they look differently, whatever way, shape, and form, but you welcome them into your home and create a space to say, I want to get to know your story. And I think that's vital for us to engage our communities, to know the stories of those that we're engaging, to really know their names, their hearts, their stories. That takes us as the wise Johnny does, is to see people and to slow down to see them.
Yeah, I think we make hospitality more complicated than we should. I like that entertainment versus hospitality, because it's so true. Hospitality is just like, come in, let me hear your story. And when we're entertaining, we're busy not really looking at the person that's in front of us. And so I think that's important. We make it too complicated.
Yeah, I think I try to encourage leaders to be as normal as normal as you can be when you're inviting people in here, because especially if we're wanting new leaders to come out of groups, you can't have this bar that is so high that most people with children cannot ever attain. So let the toys be out. Yeah. Let it be normal.
Yeah, if you feel like you're walking to a showroom.
Does. Yeah. Yes. And I know for many people, especially, I know for my wife, the bar is real high mm-hmm. when somebody comes into her home. And I understand maybe for women, it may be more difficult, to let people see things the way they are, but encouraging as much as possible because we want to reduplicate this. And the only way we can do that is to kind of show this is who we really are. And it's messy. Life is messy.
And I think some of the most authentic conversations come when, it happened more when my kids were little because I stayed home, but when I would come over and help them fold laundry mm-hmm. or help them do the dishes. I remember early on, a friend of mine had a baby, and I just went over and did dishes while she, stood there and talked. And those are some of the most authentic conversations we have when we can just see life as it is and not have to worry about putting on a.
Yeah, I think it's looking for the ordinary moments that we can share the good news. Mm-hmm. And Barry, you and I were talking before a little bit about that, that I'm learning that oftentimes I look for the extraordinary ways for God to show up and extraordinary things to do for him, but he shows up in the most ordinary ways at times. And doing laundry, folding laundry, doing dishes for a friend or a neighbor that is struggling, dropping off food for them if they're sick or having to quarantine still, these are tangible, ordinary ways that go a long way in loving people. But since this is a conversation about engaging culture, I would love to hear y'all's thoughts on what are some key values as we kind of start to wind down this conversation. What are some key values that you see in Jesus's kingdom that in ways that he engages the culture around him? Just one or two from y'all.
Well, it's the main thing I think is erring on the side of love. Mm. Accepting people, realizing that we live in a broken culture, and he said, come all, And that's hard for a lot of us to invite into our homes is brokenness. And even though we're broken, when people are really entrenched into the lifestyle of the world, yet they still want to be a part, we've got to loosen our grip more and more and accept people the way they are. And that's going to be hard. It's not going to be easy, but the experience is going to be richer if we do.
Yeah, it's a Quaker saying, an enemy is one whose story we have not heard, and that's where we meet them where they are. To say, I don't know you, and I can, based off your appearance, I can make that quick judgment. But, love came down from heaven, manifested in a physical body in Christ, and as John 1 would say, or as Eugene Peterson would quote in John 1, that love moved into the neighborhood. Like the visible representation of love moved in and met us where we're at. And we're called to do the same. We expect people to come to us, to raise up to the level before we love them. But no, it's accepting them, meeting them where they're at in their story, and walking with them into the fullness and flourishing of life that I think that God has them, because that's what love is getting to know them. Lauren, what about you? What do you think some values of Jesus's kingdom are?
Yeah, I definitely just love, but I also think of justice a little bit. Thinking about those that are marginalized and that are looked over, and all through Scripture we see Jesus eating with sinners and tax collectors and those who were not deemed worthy by women and all those things. So I think of God's justice, and not necessarily in the sense that, but just standing up for those who are marginalized and meeting the needs of those who are marginalized and seeing the people that are looked over. I think this culture is tricky because you have to, like you said, you have to meet people where they are. But Jesus always did that with the intent of showing them the transformation that he had, and so. That's a hard place to be, to love and accept them as they are, and yeah. and hopefully them seeing that God's light in you and moving them towards a relationship with Him. But it has to start with, yeah, just seeing people and meeting where they are. So I think of justice as a big thing, just, yeah, being. Yeah.
Well, I love it that you guys are, your group has gone to the least of these.
Yeah.
You're, leading your group to the least of these. And I think that's an important thing for our leaders, that taking our group on mission is so valuable, not for just the community, but for your people and for you as a leader. Seeing your the people in your group working together, and then, like we were talking about, we do conversations so much better when we're doing something
together. I think it's curious that Jesus was quite often called out, like, you're eating with who? Like, this is who you're hanging around with? And we're so cautious of, like, who we hang around with. But going to those who are the marginalized of society, whatever they might be, is vital. And so love and justice are, I think, two of the key areas that are two key values of the kingdom. I think it's also two values of our culture that they want. I mean, we want a place where we're loved and accepted for who we are, whatever that reality we want to create about who we are. But we also have a deep desire for justice that everybody can have intrinsic value and worth. Mm-hmm. But I think the third area that Jesus speaks so clearly to and that our culture is often looking for is identity. Mm-hmm. Is, as Lauren, as you were saying, like, yes, He meets us where He is in our love, and He pursues justice there. But then He's setting us up to receive the identity that is the most true thing about us, that we are His creation and we can become His sons and daughters because of what He's done for us. And He changes that identity, not just from the individual of who I am by myself, but He gives us into this family, this adoption, where the truest thing about us is that we, as Song of Solomon 7:10 would say, is that we are our beloveds and His desires for us. Like, we are so deeply loved and want to be pursued to justice. Mm-hmm. And so as you look at these three values, and this is where I want us to end, is as love, justice, and identity. The guy that I shared earlier, Mark Sayers, he says, this current cultural moment wants the kingdom of God without the king. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to, all of these different ways to pursue identity, love, and justice. But what is one tangible way that we can land on? What's one tangible way that, using one of these values, that we can share the good news of the kingdom in a way that we'll see to the flourishing of those around us? So that's a great pause right there, because that's a question that wasn't originally on my list, or kind of.
No, it was there.
But it was there.
It was there.
But as a group leader, we have to be aware of silence as well. But then you're like, oh, this is the podcast, I got to fill that empty space. But I will sit with silence for a long time.
Okay, well, I didn't want to be the first one to jump out. I want to learn to get, I've jumped out a couple times, but I don't want to do that every time.
I'm okay with you, Jimmy.
What I was thinking, and, I believe our culture is so politically charged. Mm-hmm. How do we allow people to be accepted, mm-hmm. no matter what point they're coming from politically?
Yeah.
And how do we kind of disarm, politics in our conversation, even though people are very politically charged and are excited and are passionate about certain areas of politics, just disarming and keeping the main thing the main thing. Mm-hmm. Always pulling people back to the king, and to proper, true truth. How do we keep, I think that's the question.
Yeah.
I think it's so charged today, and keeping people engaged in love. And justice, and identity, that our identity is in Christ.
Yeah.
But when we're dealing with people that don't have that value, how do we, have a group of people that are biblically engaged, but also inviting people in from a totally different mindset, and encouraging them to come along with us, and let's leave maybe some of those other thoughts to the side. That's the challenge of the day, I think.
Yeah, I think that welcoming is what St. Teresa Avila would say, is that Christ has no body but yours now. And so we have to be the hands and feet. We have to pursue justice. We have to step into these areas because it takes no energy or effort to criticize something or condemn somebody or to judge somebody. That just comes easy to our flesh now. It takes way more effort, energy to learn the struggles and the stories of people and to enter into their life to know, hey, we might have different values, and that's okay. But because of what my value says, you have intrinsic worth and dignity because I believe every person is made in the image of God. I want the flourishing of your life. And I know that only comes through knowing Jesus, but I'm not going to just serve you and love on you to get you to that finish line. I want you to accept that identity and then you to come in and see, okay, now I get to do this for the sake of others. It doesn't end on me. It doesn't end on you. Like, we continually get to receive this identity that Christ has entrusted himself to us and make his love known to those around us. And so keeping the main thing, mm-hmm. but then also loving and living in a way that I'm not trying to bait and switch you. Like, I didn't invite you over to my house to feed you a good meal and then be like, all right, on a scale of 1 to 10, like, no, I want to get to know you.
Yeah. It's the long game.
Yeah, I think it's practically just loving people. Mm-hmm. It's lending your lawnmower. And I think when you emulate Christ, those conversations will come as you get to know each other, as you learn each other's stories. Because if you ask them, they're going to ask you, and those are opportunities that you can say, you know, how God's moved in your life. But I think earning that trust by loving people and serving them, that's where it starts. I think if we really see people and slow down enough to look at needs, like, those questions are going to come up. Why do you do this? Why?
Yeah.
They'll start wondering. But we can't just jump to that. We gotta start accepting them and meeting them where they're at. And a lot of times Jesus met physical needs, and through that, the gospel, you know.
I think of the blind man that he healed, and at that moment he didn't tell him, like, all right, now believe in me and follow me. He's like, hey, you're healed. And then Jesus, like, walked off. And then later that guy's like, oh, I need to go find this dude that healed me. Who are you? And that's where he gave the opportunity. Sometimes serving just for the sake of serving, because of our love for that person's intrinsic value and worth, is an okay thing to end on. Because sometimes people will expect, like, okay, here comes the gospel presentation. They're going to do this. And when the Spirit prompts you, it's right to share the gospel. It's key to share the gospel. But if it's done out of a bait and switch or manipulative way, it's not going to be engaging. But ultimately, when it comes to sharing the gospel, it's not us who saves them. And so we have to ourselves be seeing where God is working and joining him in there. And I think, as Lauren, as you just so beautifully shared, it starts with slowing down and seeing people where they're at. So I greatly appreciate both of y'all and the wisdom that y'all have gleaned from your own following Christ and the people who have demonstrated for you, but now how you demonstrate for those around us as well. And you were the two of the most loving people I know, even as an introvert, Lauren, and Barry's quite the opposite.
I've grown a lot.
It's a muscle that we grow. Love is definitely a muscle we grow. Yeah. Engaging culture is definitely a muscle that we can grow.
It is. And the expansion of our minds and being able to tolerate people that are different and love them is such a...
So if you struggle with it, get around somebody who's really good at it.
Yeah.
Get around somebody like Johnny or Barry in your life who knows no stranger, and just watch them. And watch them light up when they're just loving people for who they are.
And I would say, even if I am tired after... But I never regret it. Like, putting that effort... it may give Johnny energy or you energy, and it may deplete me a little bit, but I never at the end of the day say, oh man, I wish I would have napped instead. Or
never
regret the intentionality that you put into people. And even if you think it's depleting or whatever, it really enhances your life so much.
Yeah.
And so it's always worth it. It's always worth it. And even though slowing down is hard and maybe it means taking things off your schedule is hard, but the end result is seeing people and hopefully eventually them seeing Jesus in you and coming to know him. So
That's Paul's encouragement, is to let people see Jesus in us, to know where we are. People who do not know Jesus will so tangibly see that his presence is working in our lives, that he's resting there, and that we're doing this sincerely out of our love and value for them, because we were loved first. Yep. He met us where we were at, so we engage and meet people where they're at. So thank you, Barry and Lauren, and thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.